Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1959, with a release date of Friday, April 4th, 2015, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Hams in Oklahoma respond to severe weather outbreak. The International Telecommunications Union dispatches rescue radio communications gear to Vanuatu. Broadcasters say no to FCC field office downsizing proposal. And a remote-controlled asteroid relocation mission will come before NASA sends a ship to Mars. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1959, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, here is Jim Damron in 8TMW.
Wednesday, March 25th was a busy afternoon and evening for ham radio emergency communications volunteers in Oklahoma. This as the Southwest Independent Repeater Association and the Tulsa Region Skywarn Nets were active in support of tornado warnings in both metropolitan areas. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, reports.
As the storms progressed across the Tulsa metro area, many of the early damage reports were passed to the Tulsa Area Emergency Management Agency via amateur radio. Oklahoma section radio amateurs on both sides of the state reported on these severe weather outbreaks until they exited late that evening. According to Lloyd Culston, KC5FM, both the Tulsa and Norman offices of the National Weather Service have amateur radio stations. Culston, who is the Oklahoma section manager, notes that both encourage Skywarn and Weather Ready Nation programs in this service area. KC5FM says that in severe weather mode, volunteer radio amateurs serve as Skywarn net controllers operating with the tactical call of Tulsa Weather under the call sign WX5TUL. There are two dual band radios, radar displays, and monitors to track warnings and briefings, as well as a system to monitor APRS. Also, the Tulsa Amateur Radio Club's UHF Superlink system is used for Skywarn traffic outside of the metro area. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
In the wake of the severe weather outbreak, 25 of the 77 counties in Oklahoma were declared disaster areas by Governor Mary Fallon, while the state's Attorney General Scott Pruitt warned citizens to be wary of scammers seeking to take advantage of survivors. The International Telecommunications Union has deployed emergency telecommunication equipment to Vanuatu following the devastation caused by Category 5 Cyclone Pam that hit the archipelago on March 13th. The ITU dispatched 40 satellite phones, 10 broadband global area support terminals, and 35 solar panels to the island nation to support relief coordination efforts. When Cyclone Pam slammed into the Vanuatu archipelago, winds were estimated to have reached 150 miles per hour, with gusts peaking around 200. This caused massive damage to the nation's infrastructure while impacting services such as electricity and communications with the outside world. Over the years, Vanuatu has been a haven for tourists and de-expeditions. Now, many who had visited are struggling to recognize damaged landmarks shown on TV news. Broadcasters appear to be in agreement with the ARRL and numerous other interests that are opposing the Federal Communications Commission's plan to close two-thirds of its field offices around the country. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, has the details.
A few weeks ago, FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler proposed downsizing the number of field offices the agency has throughout the country from 24 to 8. He called it a cost-saving tool that shouldn't hinder the agency's ability to do its work. At that time, ARRL Chief Executive Officer Dave Sumner, K1ZZ, expressed dismay at the proposal. In a widely published statement, Sumner said that it's troubling to see recommendations for such drastic reduction in the Commission's geographic footprint and the number of field agents at a time when field staff is facing ever-increasing challenges. Now it appears as if the National Association of Broadcasters has joined in condemning the Wheeler-inspired cutback proposal. In an ominous warning, the NAB says that the plan would gut the agency's eyes and ears and leave it in the dark. Bob Willer is the trade group's vice president of spectrum policy. And in a blog posting on Monday, March 30th, he warned that the change of pace is coming right as the FCC is encouraging broadcasting companies to sell their licenses to the nation's airwaves in a massive auction planned for next year, one of which will require some companies to share spectrum space. Willer noted that while the broadcast industry lobby supports the concept of spectrum sharing, that a robust mechanism for enforcement is critical to ensure that devices operate only on the frequencies they are authorized. He warned that fewer field offices could lead to some unsettling scenes if malfunctions occur while companies are trying to share airwaves, but the FCC cops aren't on the beat. That, says Willer, means disrupted emergency and amber alerts, unreliable police and fire communications, riskier air travel, and a host of other scary possibilities. So far, the FCC has rejected the impression that its response times will change. In a statement, an FCC spokesperson said that under the proposed approach, the commission would maintain its current commitment to respond to all public safety spectrum issues within one day anywhere in the country. It was also noted that the majority of the nation is reachable within 4 to 6 hours. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
The unnamed FCC spokesperson summed up by saying that if the proposal is adopted, the commission will meet its responsibilities while existing within today's flatline budget. Those who depend on FCC field bureaus for emergency response are not certain that this promise can be kept. Federal regulators are set to vote on a plan to allow wireless carriers and companies to share airwaves with the government. This in an effort to make more of the airwaves available for future wireless devices. Essentially, the government has developed a spectrum sharing plan that would protect radar systems near military bases and the coastline while auctioning off access to the spectrum in other parts of the country. A portion of these airwaves would also be reserved for free use by anyone with an FCC-certified device that doesn't create interference. Traditionally, wireless carriers have paid billions of dollars at auctions for licenses that give them exclusive rights to use airwaves for voice and mobile internet service. Now the FCC is proposing a new approach to the 3.5 gigahertz band that would allow some users to access the airwave at no cost, while others could buy exclusive licenses in specific geographic areas on a short-term basis. The proposal is being looked at as a novel new effort by the FCC, which has spent the last several years trying to free up more airwaves for wireless carriers trying to stay ahead of consumer demand, as well as setting aside some frequencies for new Wi-Fi networks. The agency proposed this airwaves sharing plan last spring, and the wireless industry and some tech companies have been arguing about the details ever since. Most of the sparring has been over technical rules, including the size of protected zones around military bases. The FCC is expected to approve the proposal at a meeting later this month. What impact such a spectrum sharing plan might have on the nearby 3.3 to 3.5 gigahertz amateur radio and amateur satellite allocation is unknown. In DX Upfront, members of the CAM Hams will be active as GS3PYE/P from the Isle of Mull between May 15th and the 22nd. The CAM Hams have been activating the Scottish Isles each year since 2008. And will be traveling to the Grass Point Isle of Mull in the Scottish Inner Hebrides in 2015. 10 operators will be active on all bands and many modes from 80 through 2 meters. 2 meters and 70 centimeters will also see satellite and EME operations. The high frequency bands will be covered by 4 simultaneous stations, while the 6 and 4 meter stations will have a great takeoff towards the UK and Europe from the island's eastern edge. All stations will be able to run at the full UK power limit. The primary EME mode will be JT65, but they'll also be available for CW skids. Up-to-date plans and progress will be on dx.camb-hams.com. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the K7MRG repeater serving Prescott, Arizona. The Federal Communications Commission intends to fine WDBJ Television Incorporated of Roanoke, Virginia, $325,000. This for broadcasting what the agency termed as graphic and explicit material during the station's evening newscast. Stephen Kinford, N8WB, has the details.
Following up on viewer complaints, the FCC Enforcement Bureau investigated the situation surrounding a WDBJ news story about a former adult film star who joined a local volunteer rescue squad. The investigation found that station staff obtained a video clip from an adult film website and broadcast those images in the news report that aired at approximately 6 p.m. on July 12, 2012. The Commission's enforcement action alleges that the broadcast of such explicit content violated federal laws prohibiting the broadcast of indecent programming. It plans to fine WDBJ $325,000, which is the maximum available penalty. This is the third action the FCC has taken regarding the broadcast of indecent material since January 2014. In April 2014, its Enforcement Bureau settled an investigation into allegations of the broadcast of vulgar language on radio station KRXA-AM, which resulted in a payment of $15,000. In August 2014, Border Media Business Trust paid $37,500 in penalties to settle an investigation into the use of indecent language during a morning show on radio station KDBR-FM. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinfort, NAWB in Wadsworth, Ohio.
The full text of Notice of Apparent Liability for Forfeiture issued to WDBJ is available at tinyurl.com/WDBJ-proposed-fine. If your club is thinking of replacing its current FM voice repeater with a new digital voice system, but don't know what's the right choice, help has arrived in the form of a new video release from HamRadioNow.tv. Produced by Gary Pierce, KN4AQ, the VHF-UHF-DV system comparison is the story of a group of digital voice enthusiasts in Charlotte, North Carolina, who have repeaters for every digital voice system available except P25. They have D-Star, DMR/Moto TRBO, and even a new Yaesu system fusion machine. So they're in a pretty good position to evaluate the various technologies. And in episode 195 of Ham Radio Now, Roland Krotz, W9HPX, gives a simple-to-understand talk at the Charlotte Hamfest comparing all three. So if you or your club are thinking of making the digital voice move, first take your web browser to tinyurl.com/hrn-on-dv. Sit back for about an hour and soak in the information that might help you make the right choice. The Dutch Kingdom Amateur Radio Society, DKARS, now has its own free monthly magazine available for download as a PDF file. This ED magazine contains articles written in both English and Dutch. If you want to subscribe, simply send an email to magazine@dkars.nl, and you'll automatically receive an email with a download link. Direct download is also available at www.dkars.nl. ETA International will have test proctors available during all 3 days of 2015 Dayton Hamvention to administer commercial radio license tests. ETA certification and FCC license exams will be administered from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. both Friday and Saturday, and 9 to noon Sunday. You can schedule exams in advance by calling Laura Robertson at ETA, 800-288-3824. Or by email to lroberson, R-O-B-E-R-S-O-N, at eta-i.org. You can also visit ETA at the Hamvention booth, number BA0429, to set up to take an exam on site. More information in PDF format at tinyurl.com/eta-hamvention-exams. The 2015 San Bernardino Microwave Society 2 GHz and Up Contest and Club Challenge is slated to begin 6 a.m. local time Saturday, May 2nd, and end at 11:59 p.m. Sunday, May 3rd. The purpose of this contest is for participants to operate all bands above 2.3 gigahertz. The exchange is the six-digit grid square. 100 QSO points are given for the first contact with a station on each band, plus 1 point per kilometer of distance. After either station moves 16 kilometers, they may work again for distance points. For more information, log forms, and last year's results, go to www.n6nb.com/sbmrules.htm. Europe's annual school club EU Day, sponsored by Germany's AATIS initiative, is inviting in-school amateur radio stations in Europe to be active on Tuesday, May 5th. This for the purpose of making contacts between those school amateur radio club girls and boys with their own call signs, as well as contacts with other stations. According to Region 1 of the International Amateur Radio Union, this activity is a great way to get young operators on the air from their school shacks using their training call signs. IARU says that very often a new operator may be intimidated by the fear of not knowing what to say to the stranger on the other side of the radio. The exchange of information through the AATIS initiative helps to overcome this fear in a low-pressure contest format. It should not be made a 5-9 contest. As such, all operators are encouraged to take more time to chat beyond the exchange of the necessary details. A certificate of participation will be issued for stations that send an excerpt from the log of the day. There's also the chance of winning one of the prizes to be given away by the AATIS initiative. AJK Padar, AC2KG of Elmwood, New Jersey, has been selected by the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers as the winner of the 2015 International Frequency Control Symposium WG Katie Award. Padar, a chief scientist at Synergy Microwave Corporation and an academic, was cited for the analysis, design, and development of a host of frequency control products exhibiting state-of-the-art performance. This includes the development of extremely low-noise crystal oscillator circuitry. The award marks the second honor for the Synergy Microwave scientist this year and the third in 3 years. The 2014 Single Operator CAS Award has been won by Nigel Cawthorne, G3TXF. This for his operation from the island of Tristan da Cunha as ZD9XF in September of 2014. While there, G3TXF worked 9,314 unique stations during the first 14 days of his one-man expedition. The award states that G3TXF demonstrated an outstanding effort to log as many DXers as possible and set a new single operator CAS award record. Club founder Michael Wells, G7VJR, presented Nigel with his plaque and prize at the CDXC annual dinner March 21st. Dave Roundtree, M6DRQ, and the band Blur are about to release their first new studio album in 12 years. The new album is entitled The Magic Whip, and the song Go Out has been pre-released on the music streaming service Spotify. The UK Telegraph newspaper reports The Magic Whip was recorded in Hong Kong and will be released April 28th. And that the group will play at London's Hyde Park on Saturday, June 20th. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. German international broadcaster Deutsche Welle is shutting down its relay station at Kigali in Rwanda. When the relay station first started transmitting, it was about 15 kilometers from the city center. Since then, Kigali has grown, and the station now finds itself in the suburbs. Because of this, the plot of land on which the station stands has skyrocketed in value. But the price of real estate was just one issue Guido Bumhauer, Deutsche Welle's director of distribution, was forced to face when attempting to negotiate with the Rwandan government. According to Bumhauer, even if the relay station wanted to stay, it couldn't because its contract with Rwanda is expiring and its government does not wish to renew it. Established in 1965, Kigali, Rwanda was the broadcaster's last shortwave relay station in operation. Dismantling the station could take until August 2016, and Deutsche Welle has to vacate the premises by that date. The White House has proposed turning Radio Marti, the U.S. government-controlled broadcaster, created in part to undermine communist rule in Cuba, into a separate entity. This as Washington seeks new direction in its dealings with Havana. Under the plan, the Miami-based broadcaster, which is part of the Broadcasting Board of Governors, would become a separate entity along with unspecified parts of Voice of America's Spanish language service. In essence, Radio Marti would cease to be part of the U.S. government and would turn into a grantee receiving federal funding. The proposal does not specify how it would be structured beyond that it would be a private nonprofit organization. In the U.K., the Register newspaper reports that some large birds have interrupted a $200 million Vodafone 4G antenna upgrade program. The five pairs of nesting falcons disrupted Vodafone's customers' mobile phone signals in London and the southeast because the birds have set up shop on the mobile carrier's towers. Vodafone spokesman Simon Gordon told the press that falcons usually like rocky cliffs, but given the absence of such in metropolitan London, they make do with phone towers. Typically, they nest for 2 to 3 months. Gordon added that Vodafone was very pleased to have the world's fastest bird as visitors. You can read the complete story at tinyurl.com/nesting-falcons. The number of ham radio operators on board the International Space Station is now at 3. This following the March 28th arrival of Russian cosmonauts Mikhail Kornienko, RN3BF, and Gennady Padalka, RN3DK, along with NASA astronaut Scott Kelly. European Space Agency astronaut Samantha Cristoforetti, IZ0UDF, will return to Earth in May after Kel Lindgren, KO5MOS, Oleg Kononenko, RN3DX, and Kamaya Yui arrive at the ISS as part of a scheduled crew rotation. Cristoforetti has conducted several amateur radio school contacts during her time on board the ISS. AMSAT's Director of Field Operations, Patrick Stoddard, WD9EWK, says the handout titled Getting Started with the FM Satellites is now available on the World Wide Web. Written by Stoddard, the article shows the basic equipment and techniques to learn successful operating on the satellites. It also gives specific information on how to operate via SO50, the only currently available FM satellite at the moment. It's posted at tinyurl.com/FM-satellite-operating. INDIX SM6MCW is now on the air as D44TBO from Cape Verde. The length of his stay is unknown. So far, his activity has been on 30, 20, 15, 12, and 10 meters CW. QSL via SM6MCW. VA3EGG will be active as 6Y4DX from Jamaica's Jewel Paradise Cove Resort until mid-April. His operation will be holiday style on 40 through 10 meters with 100 watts into a 46 feet long wire. QSL direct to VA3EGG. Lastly, IZ2DPX has announced an operation from the Seychelles, possibly with the call sign S79DPX between August 9th and the 23rd. Activity will be on 80 through 6 meters using all modes. QSL via his home call sign. For details and updates, keep an eye on iz2dpx.jimdo.com. And finally this week, a remote-controlled mission to the Red Planet has been a long-time priority for NASA. Now the space agency revealed they will start looking on an asteroid relocation mission first. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, has the details.
NASA Associate Administrator Robert Lightfoot says that the Asteroid Redirect Mission, or ARM, will provide an initial demonstration of several spaceflight capabilities that will be needed to send astronauts deeper into space and eventually to Mars. As the agency tries to select the best asteroid for the mission, it will study the candidate asteroids regarding their size, rotation, shape, and precise orbit. The main candidates so far are asteroids Itokawa, Bennu, and 2008 EV5. The agency expects to have selected an asteroid by 2019 and then place it into a stable orbit around the moon to study it. To move the asteroid into the moon's orbit, NASA plans to use new trajectory and navigation methods. NASA said it will be picking up a small asteroid that will burn in space before reaching us if it attempts to get into Earth's atmosphere. According to NASA, the ARM robotic spacecraft will test several capabilities that will be needed for a long-term human mission. For example, it will test the Advanced Solar Electric Propulsion, or SEP, technology. SEP will basically be used to harness sunlight power and convert it to electrical power using solar arrays that will then be used to propel spacecraft engines. And that's only one of the research projects that will be an integral part of the asteroid redirect mission. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
NASA plans to launch the asteroid redirect mission in 2020. It says that it is expected to take 6 years before it can place an asteroid into lunar orbit using radio remote control. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and to you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Before we go, a reminder that Amateur Radio Newsline is seeking nominations for its 2015 Young Ham of the Year Award. For consideration, a nominee must have used amateur radio in some way that has benefited his or her community or encouraged technological development directly or indirectly related to communications. Nominees must be 19 years or younger and reside in the United States, including Hawaii and Alaska, Canada and Puerto Rico, or any of the Canadian provinces. The individual must also hold a currently valid United States or Canadian amateur radio license. This award is not a contest. The person selected as Young Ham of the Year is judged on his or her overall accomplishments and contributions. Any prizes awarded are secondary in nature. Deadline for submitting an application is May 30, 2015, and the decision of the judging committee is final. To obtain an application, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to 2015 Young Ham of the Year Award, care of Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Also, download a form in Microsoft Word format at www.arnewsline.org/YHOTY. Click on the word here and save the file to print at a later time. Presentation of the 2015 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award will take place the weekend of August 15th and 16th at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Huntsville, Alabama. For now, with producers Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF in Los Angeles, Skeeter Nash, N5ASH in Topeka, plus our news team worldwide, I'm Jim Dameron, N8TMW, reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, and saying 73. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2015, all rights reserved.